1057 WLGC presents Airing It Out. Now, here's your host, Drew Skaggs.
This is Airing It Out, broadcasting live from the palatial studios of 1057 WLGC, located two blocks from the always crystal clear Ohio River. Welcome to the juggernaut known as AIO, where we bring to you topical talk radio that's informative, illustrative, ingratiating, instigating, infuriating, and invigorating. I switched the last two. Did you catch that?
I did, yeah.
So that we're invigorated going into this one-hour abbreviated show of Airing It Out due to the Russell East Carter basketball game. I'm glad they're getting the game in, because it sure seems like we've got some winter weather headed this way, and I found that out by going to the grocery store today. My bad. That is not something that you want to do when you've got weather on the way. Joining us right off the top here is United States Senate candidate. By the way, we can be reached 1-800-551-1057, or by going to Drew Skaggs, that's with a K, of course, .com. Joining us, as I started, U.S. Senate candidate on the Republican side of things, Rand Paul. Rand, how are you?
Good. Good to be with you, Drew.
First of all, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, and your advance people did a great job staying in touch and trying to work this out, and kudos to them, specifically Ryan. So,
right.
I just wanted to let you know that. So how should I refer to you? Should it be Doctor? Should it be Rand? Should it be Mr. Paul? Should it be Dr. Paul?
Whatever is fine. I've spent most of my life, you know, learning and training in medicine. I do eye surgery. And so I'm always honored to be called Doctor, but Rand is fine as well. And now I'm in the mix of running for office. Sometimes people ask me, they say, well, why would you go from a profession that's universally respected to a profession that isn't so well respected? But
that is definitely two ends of the spectrum. Any polls you look at today, you see at the very bottom of the poll are politicians, with what people feel and about them. Especially right now with the undercurrent of anger, quite frankly, that is out there. And let me ask you a question that I ask everybody that comes on the show that has a political stripe and is wearing political stripes. Why are you running?
Well, I think part of it is, in what we talked about in the introduction, is that I think we need people who are not the typical politicians, not the career politicians, you know, people who have had other careers, who have been small businessmen. But I tell people the primary reason I'm running is because I'm worried, you know, about our country. I'm worried about us drowning and being devoured in a sea of debt. You know, I think the debt could overwhelm us as a nation. The deficit this next year will be 13% of our gross national product. It's higher than it was even during World War II. And I think there are definitely dangers to us as a society by having such a large debt.
Well, any time that you have debt, whether it's individual, corporately, or collectively as a country, as you well know, you're not free. Yeah, you are not free. I don't care who it is. If you have, now, granted, debt of a moderate amount is not something I'm talking about. It's what you just said about the trillions of dollars. We've already. You know, we're already at $12 trillion. I think they just raised it to 12.1, whatever the ceiling was. And that doesn't really count the unfunded mandates that are part of that. So you're not really free with this debt. I know that you one thing that I saw on your website is something that I have been talking about for 3 years now, which we'd never hear out of hardly any politicians, which is cutting spending.
Yeah, we're currently spending money at $53,000 a second, and really there's enough bipartisan blame to go around on spending. You know, a lot of Republicans have woken up now that Obama and the Democrats are in charge, and it's easy to criticize them for the spending, but you know, we were in charge for about 8 years, and we doubled the debt from $5 to $10 trillion because we didn't have a president who had the courage to veto any spending bills. We didn't have Republicans who had the courage to introduce less spending because they're part of the pork barrel spending often. And that's kind of why one of the main things that distinguishes me is I'm calling for term limits. I think all of them need to come home after a certain period of time, and we'd be much better off. You know, I use as an example, over in West Virginia, they've got a senator who's been up there 50 years, and they've paved every inch of West Virginia. He's a Democrat, but we've got Republicans from Alaska, and they've paved every inch of Alaska. You remember the Road to Nowhere was an earmark up in Alaska done
right.
by Republicans.
Right.
So really, I think there's blame for the spending on both sides of the aisle.
Oh, absolutely. You've got the reason that the Republican Party is in the minority status that it is allowing this debacle of a health care to go through because they're in such a minority status, but they have only themselves to blame because they were not able to differentiate themselves from Democrats. And you know, I'm a conservative, I'm a conservatarian, and I don't care if it's a Democrat or Republican. What I like to see is it seems to me that in the Democrat side of things, you've got blue dog, so-called blue dog Democrats that are gaining power, which I think is a positive. Now, with the Republican Party, you know, your party that you're running for, you know, at least the establishment of the Republican Party seems content to hope that they can return and be returned to power just by sitting on their haunches, sitting back, watching what's going on, and hoping they're the default choice. You know, I think that's a death wish.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. I think what will happen is Republicans will pick up a few seats at this rate, but unless we can capture the imagination of the public through some kind of national message, like when we had the contract with America in 1994, people were captivated by that, and we changed 50 seats in one election.
Right.
But we had some specific items. One of them was term limits. You know, one of them was reining in spending. But, you know, by 1996, after the Republicans had taken over, there's a famous quote by a Republican leader who will go unnamed who said, you know what, we're going to do the K Street strategy now. And K Street's where all the lobbyists are. They said, look, the Democrats were in power for 40 years by catering to the lobbyists. We'll do the same thing and stay in power for 40 years. The problem was is that the people who elected the Republicans actually did want balanced budgets and less spending and smaller constitutional government. So when the Republicans sold down the river and lost their believability on fiscal conservatism, people got tired, just started staying at home and weren't working hard for the Republicans, and now the Republicans are getting demolished in the elections.
Absolutely they are. With me on the line is Dr. Rand Paul, running for the United States Senate seat of the retiring Jim Bunning on the Republican slate of things. I said establishment Republicans. Let's be honest. When we're discussing what happened after 96 and they got away from their roots being the Republicans, you've got somebody in Kentucky by the name of Mitch McConnell who is the very definition of establishment Republicans. How have you been received by the so-called establishment Republicans in the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
Well, I think in the beginning, the establishment thought they could just pick a candidate, they would be anointed by someone in Washington, and it would be over with. And they very quickly found out that this Tea Party movement that I'm part of is big, getting bigger, and really wants some change. And we've rattled them because we started out 11 points down in last summer. But we had a poll 2 weeks ago that actually showed us up 19 points in the primary. So we've come a long way, and I think they're no longer dismissing us. And I've actually met with Senator McConnell, and I think after the primary he will be helpful to me.
So you have met, you have met with Mitch?
I have met
okay.
with him, and I think that the thing is I try to not be divisive in making it a personality contest between individuals. I'm running on my own merits and for what I think
right.
is best for the country. But in the end, after the primary, I think he will help me because I think he will see that we want to try to get back to a Republican majority.
A couple things there. I'm not being dismissive of Senator McConnell. You know, he's a very smart guy. You don't get to where you are where he is by not being so. However, it's common knowledge within the Commonwealth that the kingmaker of the Republican Party is Mitch McConnell. Anybody that you talk to in the know That's a fait accompli. You understand that intrinsically. And I've had your opponent, Secretary of State Grayson, on. Jeff, it's been two or three times we've had Trey on.
I think
we've had him on three different times over the span of the last 3 years. So that, you know, that's the reason I was asking about that. But you mentioned the Tea Party that you're a part of, the grassroots organization, the stuff that everybody knows occurred over the summertime of the American people spontaneously coming together and saying enough is enough. I know that it's taxed enough already is the acronym that many people affix to the Tea Party movement, but it's so much more than that. Can you expound on that?
Yeah, I spoke at the first Tea Party here in my town, Bowling Green, Kentucky, last April 15th, and we had over 700 people show up. It was the biggest political event I've attended in Warren County. All of the Tea Parties across the state have been bigger than any GOP event I've been to. We had 3,000 or 4,000 people in Louisville at a Tea Party. So, I mean, it is huge. We had close to 2,000 in Paducah, close to 2,000 in Lexington. So it's a big movement, and it's out there. But I will tell you that when you talk to people at the Tea Party movement and you become part of this movement, you know that people don't want more taxes, but they're mostly concerned about the debt. They're concerned that government is out of control, that we're destroying our country, we're destroying, we're leaving our kids with such a future burden that is just enormous. And so they see that, and I think if you ask most people in the Tea Party, would you accept the same taxes if they would just reduce spending? Probably most of them would say yes. None of us like our taxes and would like to pay less, but we really see it's this burden that's being placed on future generations. I mean, we owe the Chinese $800 billion. We owe the Japanese $700 billion. You know, we won the Cold War, but we still owe the Russians $120 billion. I mean, the list goes on and on, and I tell people in my speeches, you know, we used to be a great country exporting products. Now our biggest export is our debt, and that's not a good sign of a healthy country.
And that brings me back to you lose freedom when you have the Chinese, the Japanese, and even to a lesser extent the Russians holding your notes, holding that over your head. I know you said $800 billion, but I think it's more than that from what I can tell. One never knows when the Federal Reserve gets involved with things. But you and I can talk about it, and a lot of people intrinsically know what we're speaking of. But in common layman's terms, what are we going to do if they ever call that debt in? I mean, that's where they have us.
Right. I think it's sort of a house of cards. Now, it's in their interest not to have a collapse of the dollar, but you are seeing a lot of reports of the Chinese buying gold as well as India buying gold. The other day, the IMF, which is a international bank that we make a large contribution to, sold 200 tons of gold. It was bought by India, snatched up, but interestingly, the day that they sold 200 tons of gold, the price didn't go down, the price went up because there's so much uncertainty. And while I think future generations are going to have to pay for the debt, I think there's a more immediate concern, and that is that we could destroy our dollar in the process, because when these countries quit buying our debt, to pay for our debt, we'll monetize it, which means the Federal Reserve, I know you understand this, but for your listeners, means that the Federal Reserve will be printing money, basically, which you can get into a spiral situation where your currency is devaluing rapidly. We had this happen in 1979, where we had nearly 20% inflation. And the Federal Reserve, Bernanke, says, oh, I can stop this. I have an exit strategy. But there's a very important question for Bernanke. What if you have 20% inflation, but you have 0% growth and 10% unemployment still in a year or two? There's no way they're going to conceive of taking money out of the system at that point. And then what if it continues to spiral on? See, they're used to taking money out of the system when you have inflation and growth, but what if you have inflation, no growth, and significant unemployment? That's a real problem.
Yeah, absolutely it is, and that's what I've argued on this show for a long time now with the profligate spending going on. I've got a Visa and a MasterCard and a Discover card, and I'm going to borrow from my Discover card to pay my Visa. And when my Discover card comes due, I'm going to grab my MasterCard, and I'm going to pay. At some point, you got to pay the piper on it. And with all the spending that's going on, it doesn't take you anything but Econ 101 to understand that that inflation, while tame currently, cannot stay tame.
Right. And I think to fix the system, I think the system is utterly broken, and I think that's one reason why you need term limits. It's a big difference between Grayson and myself. He's a career politician, young man who's never done anything but run for office, and he will be distraught if he doesn't have another office to hold. And I think really he needs to spend some time in the private sector, and we need to have limits on these career politicians. The other thing we need, though, to get spending under control is there has to be a rule. There used to be the rule of the Constitution. You know, there were certain enumerated powers, and we always would have had a very frugal, small government with a balanced budget, but we no longer pay attention to the Constitution. So I think we need a rule like we have in Kentucky. In Frankfurt, they have to balance the budget by law.
Right.
And we need that in Washington desperately.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'd love to have that. You mentioned term limits. I think that's a great idea. I mean, that is how our founding fathers set this system up. It was for the doctors of our great country to take a few years out, go serve their country, and then return back to their practice. The lawyers, the garbage men, everybody across all stripes for public service. But the problem is you've got people up there that have to vote, that they're not going to vote themselves out of office. You know,
I think the only way to get term limits is to have a national movement, and I plan on being part of that national movement. And this national movement would have to be so big and so large and so loud that ultimately it will be done. One way to get the momentum going is to begin getting state legislatures to pass constitutional amendments to have term limits. And I think you might have it work that way, because most state legislators all have dreams of going on to federal office, so it's in their self-interest to actually vote for term limits on federal office. And so you might be able to pass things through state legislators, but you need to get a national movement. You're going to need to get a presidential candidate, ultimately, who will run on term limits. And there are some people promoting it. I mean, Senator DeMint from South Carolina recently introduced a term limits bill, and we've come out and we've endorsed that bill. But he only had, I think, 5 co-sponsors, all Republicans, in the Senate right now.
Right. Yeah, well, imagine that, only 5 out of 100, which, by the way, who I'm speaking with, Rand Paul, Dr. Paul, is running for that very august body known as the United States Senate from the Commonwealth of Kentucky. He's out of Bowling Green, but going to be heading up this way, or so I've been told, weather permitting. Is that true?
Yes, I'm going to be in Flatwoods Friday evening at 6:30. I think it's at the Flatwoods City Building.
Right.
And I'm not sure if I'm going to have to come up by sleigh or snowshoes or how, but we plan on trying to be there Friday night.
Well, you know, with the sleigh deal, I mean, you got some reindeer that are pretty tired. You know, they just had a pretty good route they ran there on December 25th. So
tired out.
They're tuckered, but we hope that you can make it up this way. I think Ryan told me that you're going to be in Lewis County also. Is that?
Yeah, we have 3 or 4 events there. I think we're also maybe doing a breakfast Saturday morning in Ashland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, is there a Russell Street in Ashland?
I think actually he mentioned that you were going to be at the Golden Corral in Russell. Is that?
That could be. Russell is a small town near Ashland.
Right, right. It's actually in Greenup County, but it's just it's right next door. To Ashland.
We're doing Flatwoods, then we're going to be in Russell Saturday morning for breakfast, and then we have, I think, 3 events over in Lewis County.
Well, you know, welcome to God's country, then. That would be Eastern Kentucky. I spent some time down in Western Kentucky also, but and Central Kentucky, for that matter. Northern Kentucky, not so much. But, you know, listen, we've got a great Commonwealth here, and I know Senator Bunning is resigning. What is your vision? I know we've talked a lot of broad strokes. Let's narrow it down. What your vision as an elected representative, one of the 2 U.S. senators from Kentucky, how is that going to benefit the citizens of our Commonwealth?
I think the primary thing is that we need to elect people who don't see themselves or conceive of themselves as errand boys or errand girls to go up and snatch some federal dollars and bring it home. My point is that for every dollar we bring home, we've already sent $2 up there. You know, 50% of every dollar gets wasted in the bureaucracy of Washington. So my plan for Kentucky is, let's try to keep more of that tax money in Kentucky. Let's don't send it to Washington, because that's the mistake in the beginning, is that we send it up there, and then we think, oh, we'll elect representatives who will snatch back some of the pork. But the system is so broken that I think in the end, the inflation you get from destroying your currency, the debt you incur for your children, you really need someone who has the guts to stand up and say, look, there is no Santa Claus. The federal government is not an ATM. We can't just continue to tap into a source that is dry of money. So I'm going to be honest and tell people, look, I'm not going up there to try to snatch back money. I'm going to go up there and say, let's try to leave more of it in Kentucky to begin with.
Well, that would be a breath of fresh air, but I've got to issue a disclaimer here in case my my twin seven-year-old boys are listening. Dr. Paul did not mean that there is no Santa Claus. He was just referring... Right. Right. So he was just – that's not what he meant. I hope that I'm not crossing bounds by putting words in your mouth. But, you know, I just –
Only as a metaphor that
right.
The federal government cannot be Santa Claus. There can
Thank
only
you.
Be one true Santa Claus.
Thank you so much. That's exactly right. One true Santa Claus. It ain't got nothing to do with Washington, D.C. That was terrible English, wasn't it? When you said, it's not the duty of a senator to go up there and snatch every dollar, I understand what you're saying. The problem is we've become conditioned to, we're against pork and we're against earmarks, unless, of course, not when it's our guy bringing it home, not when it's coming home to our district. That's how we're conditioned.
And that's part of the problem, though, and I think there's enough of us worried now, this is what the Tea Party's about, is that people don't want the same old career politician who goes up there, grows old in office, is up there for 50 years so he can get enough seniority or she can get enough seniority to bring home the bacon. Problem is the pig has been picked clean, and there's nothing left to grab up there, and you're grabbing scraps. And in doing so, in perpetuating this system, we're destroying the country. So we have to wake up and just say, you know, because if people want that, the other candidates are all going to be better at that than me, because I'm not going up there just to try to bring home the bacon. In fact, I've made a pledge I will not earmark funds. I think that the funds need to be spent based on the value of the project. And it's not that I'm opposed to all federal projects. We bring in $2.4 trillion in Washington, but we're spending $4 trillion. We've doubled the amount of spending in 10 years. For goodness sakes, could we not just put up with spending $2.4 trillion, just what we take in? There still would be plenty of roads built. There would be plenty of dollars spread around, and the roads that are built should be based on where the most traffic is, where the roads are oldest, where the need is most. But they shouldn't be based on the fact that you've got a gray-haired politician up there who has a lot of power and he brings more back to your state than you deserve.
That's how it should work. But it's been polluted. Let's be honest.
We've got to turn out a bunch of the rascals. I mean, that's why you've got to change the system. And it's not just wanting a better system. It's not just me wanting to change the system. It's that the system is so broken that we are in a dangerous time in our country because the debt has become so large that really we have to. We don't have a choice anymore. And that if we don't change the system, if we keep going at it the same way we've been going at it for a generation, I think there could be something calamitous happen. We've had great nations, civilized nations, that have destroyed their currency. If you look at Germany in 1923, the Weimar Republic,
yes.
They destroyed their currency to such an extent that people had their money in wheelbarrows. The workers demanded to be paid twice a day because the money became of such less value even by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. There's a
Western European society, what you have here currently now is Zimbabwe would be an example of that.
And the thing is out of that chaos, they elected Hitler. And people give me a hard time saying, oh, you're saying so-and-so is Hitler. I'm not saying that anyone is Hitler, but I am saying that when a currency is destroyed, civilized countries have in the past chosen strong leaders, and sometimes these leaders vilify certain ethnic groups. You know, Hitler said it was so-and-so's fault. Let's take them and put them in concentration camps. And he blamed all the chaos on them. And so when you have chaos, you also get scapegoats, and you also get leaders that end up being horrific, you know, madmen that we have in office. And I think there's a danger to that, and that's why we have to be very careful that we don't let our country slip away from us.
Well, as Reagan once said, you know, freedom and liberty is but a generation away, you know, from losing that freedom and liberty. And, you know, I know a lot of people out there will automatically say, well, you know, what's he talking about, the Weimar Republic and what happened there? That's not, you know, you can't say that's attributable to what we're going through. But I understand what you're saying. It is, you can draw a parallel to what was happening in the early post-World War One, early 1920 time frame in Germany, which led to the rise of the National Socialist Workers' Party, otherwise known as the Nazi Party over there. And I know people are going to say, well, you're a bomb thrower. No, what that is it's realism. And that's what's missing in D.C. is the realism. They're in that bubble in D.C. For example, the healthcare debate. It's always interesting to me that what we always heard during the Gingrich years was that he wants to take away your Medicare. He wants to take away your Social Security. Well, what party is the one cutting $500 billion out of Medicare?
Yeah, and meanwhile telling us that an $874 billion bill really is not going to add anything to the deficit.
No, it's revenue neutral.
Because government is so efficient that they're going to squeeze several hundred billion dollars of waste out of the system. And I always laugh and I say, this is the same government that had trouble distributing water at the Superdome after Katrina, the same government that had 3,000 trailers that never left Arkansas to get to Katrina, the same government that had FEMA funds that were paid to prisoners in Baton Rouge who applied for dislocated funds at the time of the hurricane. I mean, we have a government that's thoroughly incompetent. We have a government that after 10 years still has not figured out how not to issue visas to potential terrorists.
Which is what I was going to say. With me on the line is Dr. Rand Paul, running for U.S. Senate in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, which is what I was going to... We also have him saying, okay, we've got the dad calling in with my son's a terrorist. His visa was revoked in Great Britain. He was on a no-fly list. He bought a ticket, you know, with no luggage, no return ticket, with cash, and he still got through this system that was set up by that same government.
There were a few clues there that should have been picked up on. But here's an interesting thing. We have so many people who are so petrified to do anything that might not look like everybody's being treated the same that we can't develop any kind of security. For example, we've been 10 years and we still don't have a frequent flyer program for business travelers. My brother-in-law is on a plane 3 times a week and he has to go through the same rigmarole. He's willing to do a background check one time. Once you give him a background check and let him just stream on through with a secure ID, why can't they develop that? Same with international travel. If you're an international businessman from Nigeria and you travel 3 times to the U.S. a year, do a background check and you shouldn't have any trouble. But if you're a student who's been traveling to Yemen and who the British took away your passport, it's like, for goodness sakes, can we not spend a little bit of extra time and effort to keep those people off a plane?
Well, you know, we had a caller in last show that said, you know, it's just common sense. And that's it in a nutshell. It's common sense, whether it's attributable to our TSA system, whether it's attributable to the healthcare debate going on in this country right now. That's what's missing. And I know that's simplistic.
Interestingly, right after 9/11, a bill came forward, and there was an insertion into this bill that said, let's suspend all student visas from about 10 nations that have you know, either terrorist camps or have the potential to train terrorists and send them here. Let's just do no student visas till we get it figured out.
I remember that. They were outraged.
Well, yeah, and you know what happened? Actually, the Bush administration State Department secretly lobbied and had it taken out of the bill, and it never passed.
Well, I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked because that's political correctness.
Exactly.
We have got to bow to that altar above everything. We've got to be politically correct in this country. And what I say on this show a lot is whether it is the Fort Hood incident with Major Nadal, whether it's the bombing, the attempted Christmas Day bombing, what I always say, and it's a running joke on this show, and it's a sad running joke, but every time something comes up, I say, man, those Amish are at it again. You know, those darn Amish are just, they're all over the place doing this. And I know that's tough.
My question also is, who was ever fired over 9/11? There was an FBI agent that wrote 70 letters about that Massawi who wanted to learn how to take off a plane but not land it. They captured him. He wrote 70 letters. No one ever applied for a warrant to look at his computer. No one did a damn thing about those letters. And you know what? When they searched his computer on September 12th, they found information that linked him to 17 out of 19 hijackers. But I never heard of one FBI superior or director who should have been in the line of command there losing his job. George Tenet was given a Medal of Honor, for goodness sakes.
The CIA director.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the thing is, he may not have been directly responsible for that, but when you're in charge of the CIA and the FBI and you have such an abysmal failure of intelligence as 9/11, unfortunately, you have to lose or should have lost your job, and there should have been immediately someone new step in. And instead, what they do is they just add new bureaucracies, hundreds of billions of dollars, and yet we still can't even monitor who gets a visa coming into this country.
I know, it's frustrating. Listen, we got two more minutes. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on. We hope that you'll join us again. I hope it wasn't too painful for you this evening.
No, I'm very glad to be on, and if you wouldn't mind letting your listeners know, they can check out my website at randpaul2010.com, and that has much more information about us and our campaign.
I don't have to do that because you just did it. So that would be like something D.C. would do. I mean, it's already been done. Why do it again? Right? RandPaul2010.com. That's where somebody can go to see your platform, kind of flesh it out further, see it with their own eyes about where you stand on various issues, running for the United States Senate from our great Commonwealth on the Republican side of things. We wish you nothing but the best. Once again, thanks for appearing on my show. I personally appreciate it. And be careful heading down here to Eastern Kentucky. You're going to love it. You know, I'm kind of worried. Well, I don't know. We always need some good eye surgeons around here. See, he's going to fall in love with Eastern Kentucky here, and he's going to go home, and he's going to tell his lovely wife, Kelly, listen, we're going to have to uproot, and we're going to have to move down to Eastern Kentucky because it's God's country.
Well, I'm looking forward to visiting out there. I've been through that area a couple times. I used to have grandparents who lived in Pittsburgh, and we used to drive through the Ashland area.
Okay. All right. Well, be careful with the weather coming in, and Godspeed to you on this election, and we hope that we can call you again more precisely, you can call us again.
We'd love to do it. Thank you, Drew.
Sounds good. Thanks, Rand. Take care.
Bye.
That was Dr. Rand Paul running for United States Senate from Kentucky in the 2010 election, specifically first week of November of 2010. What did you think of Rand?
I think he was good. He well-spoken.
Well-spoken. You know, he's the son of Ron Paul, and the thing with our lovely national media is they've attempted to marginalize Ron Paul as just a nutcase, nut job, nutbag, you know, a lot of different things. You know what? He made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
You know? He made his case well, I guess is another way to put it. And I think it's the perfect time for Rand Paul to be running. With the bubbling under the surface and sometimes above the surface anger about what is going on in D.C. If I was Trey Grayson, I would be worried. And listen, Trey is a friend of the show. He's been on here three times. He's on my contact list on my iPhone, Trey is. And I don't wish him ill will, but you know, let me tell you something. If you don't take Rand Paul seriously, you do so at your own peril. So he'll be up here. You can go to randpaul2010.com, and that's his official webpage for his campaign. He's going to be up in Flatwoods on Friday evening or Friday afternoon. Then he's going to be going to Lewis County, and he's coming back over here to Russell, I believe, on Saturday morning. I know his schedule better than he knows it. Did you catch that? But he's juggling a lot of things. You know, when
true.
I talked to when I called him today, he was in surgery. So, you know, he's juggling a lot of balls. A lot of balls are in the air with Rand. And we'll probably have him on as the election draws closer. But fear not. Fear not. We will also have Daniel Mongiardo, Lieutenant Governor Mongiardo, back on the program. He's running on the Democrat side to replace Jim Bunning. And also Jack Conway, Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. He will also be on the show. I spoke with Jack back in May about coming on, and as it draws closer, everybody will probably be coming on the show and opining, and it'll be great for the area, because you'll have heard from all four candidates, two on each side of the political spectrum, two Democrats, two Republicans, and you can make the call. I mean, I'm not saying this show's going to have, but it helps. It helps because very few times you can sit there and listen to somebody for 35 or 40 minutes talk about their vision for it, because they don't know what I'm going to ask them. I guarantee you Rand Paul didn't know what I was going to ask him because we just don't do that. We just get out here and wing it. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it's just a train wreck.
Yeah.
And no, this is not the Martin Show. So, time for the world-famous stupid stuff.
Oh, how come things that happen to stupid people keep happening to me?
Dateline Everett, Washington. Washington woman seduces date, makes him undress, then robs him. Wow, that is a headline you don't see often.
Right.
How's this for a date from Hades? A woman seduces you, leaves you naked, and takes off with your valuables, including your car. You know, when I read that, you know what I immediately thought? At least we know now what Nancy Pelosi does when the House is not in session. She's got to stay in character.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she's got to keep her thing going. So Ashley Dawson did this to an unsuspecting man. The alleged victim, Andrew Scarborough, says it appears he went looking for love in all the wrong places. Isn't that a country song? Including the internet. You know, it just should say the internet.
Yeah.
It doesn't really need to say including.
Right.
He hoped he'd found love when he met a woman on MySpace. They met in person, went back to his place. They began to do a little Marvin Gaye action. That was playing on the Who's one of my favorites, by the way. And that's when things got wrong in a hurry. We went back to my house. Next thing I know, she took my car, my cell phone, my wallet, my keys, and my laptop.
Wow.
Now, she's 19, lured him into the shower, told him she had a surprise for him. She didn't lie.
That is a surprise.
She was not lying.
Right.
So after about a minute, I went, wait a second, something's not right here. I jumped out, and she was already gone. They found his Mustang, towed it back to him, but Dawson stole it again a month later while it was parked outside his workplace. So they knew who stole his vehicle in the first place, but didn't arrest her.
Wow.
I don't... You know, he's not shy. He isn't so bold about dating again. He can't trust anybody anymore. There's just no point. This just shows how stupid guys are. Doesn't it?
Right, yeah.
You can't trust anybody. Andrew, buddy... You're a moron. You're just the stereotype of guys. You know, we're just... Women just have to bat their eyebrows at us, you know, our eyelashes. Hi, sweetie. And we're done. And see, the thing about it is, women know it.
Yeah.
Women know it. Yeah. It's age old. He won't be jumping in the shower anytime soon. Dateline WEAU.com. Drunk Santa Claus scares kids while looking for his reindeer.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Why?
Santa Claus is coming to town. Gather round.
Who is the babes in there going, why?
I have no idea.
Oh, that was kind of a jazzy version. Yeah,
might have been the Andrews Sisters.
I was
sure.
Thinking the Andrews Sisters, but I was, well, no, it's probably not.
I'm not
but
sure I really, who that was.
It's not the Pointer Sisters.
No.
A drunk Santa Claus prompts, this is a fake Santa Claus, kiddies. She called prompts mom to call 911 after he stumbles into her yard, apparently looking for his reindeer and scaring her kids. He was hammered, but the kids are just precious. The kids say they knew right away this Santa was a hoax. Katie Dougherty, 9, said he smelled like alcohol. I knew it wasn't the real Santa because Santa doesn't drink alcohol. Okay, well, listen, you can't slide things past Katie. He was loud and had really dirty hands, is what Katie said. 6-year-old Zoe, her little sister, describes him in one word. Drunk. That's bad when a 6-year-old knows that.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It is.
He was yelling at them, "Have you seen my reindeer? If you see my reindeer, call me right away." Said the girl's mom. She called police. Instead, he was on his way home from a party, by the way. The fake Santa was. So the we are at the end. The school closings. What's the situation? You can go to our website, which is,
actually no, we don't have them on our website.
Well, we'll nix that.
Yeah, we will have them on the air for you all night. We're going to have somebody here updating the list all night long to make sure we don't leave anybody out. Right now, all we have on our list is Ashland Independent Schools, Boyd County, Greenup County, Elliott County, Lewis County, and Carter County. They're all closed for tomorrow.
Okay.
But we'll be updating our list all night long. We'll be making announcements. We've got the Russell ball game coming up. I'm sure Rick and the guys will give you the updates. If Russell's closed tomorrow, they'll have all that information, and we'll keep you updated on the full list.
What about Ohio? Is there anything in Ohio?
We don't have anything for Ohio yet, but it will be on our list if it is on. We'll mention it if it is on our list.
Well, it stands to reason that you're probably going to have some school closings in Ohio.
Yeah.
We just don't have any as of right now. And I keep hearing just this forecast is all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know, I keep hearing 1 to 3, 2 to 4. I've heard 5 to 6. You know, and one never knows. But I know this. In Lexington, they are under a winter storm warning now.
Right.
They've lifted the watch down in central Kentucky. So, you know, usually... And this storm is coming from the St. Louis, Arkansas area, somewhere out in that part of the country. So usually when if Lexington has got a winter storm warning in effect, it usually bolts east when
right.
It's coming from there, correct?
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't all of a sudden just take a dip south or just go straight up north and just whack Detroit.
No, not usually. The weather usually comes straight from the west towards the east.
So if as it stands, if Lexington gets whacked like it's supposed to get whacked, chances are that we here in the listening audience in the Tri-State area will likewise get whacked.
That's right. Right now, winter weather advisory starts tomorrow at 9 a.m. and it goes through Friday. And
yeah, I noticed that. That's a long watch time. It's like 9 a.m. in the morning till like 7 p.m.
6 o'clock Friday night.
6 o'clock Friday night. That's right. A long time.
Yeah, it is.
Usually it's, you know, about a 12-hour period.
Yeah.
So.
And what we have right now says 1 to 3 inches of accumulation tomorrow during the day, and then an additional accumulation tomorrow night of about an inch, and then some more on Friday.
So
they don't have a total for Friday.
See, that's 2 to 4, because I know in Lexington it's 5 to 7.
Yeah.
And the Lexington area, I mean, I'm not. I know people are going, oh, I don't care about Lexington, but that's the way the storm's moving.
Right. It's good to know what's happening there because it's on its way here.
And that starts 4 a.m. in the morning. The
right.
Winter storm warning starts at 4 a.m. and our watch starts at 9 a.m.
Right.
So I'm saying it's moving this way.
Yes, that's right.
You know, I should be a weather forecaster because I could tell you one damn thing: global warming doesn't exist.
I wouldn't think so the way it's been the last week.
Anybody with any sense in their head knows.
Yeah, tomorrow's...
And it's supposed to be just brutally cold for the next 4 or 5 days, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Tonight's low is 16. Tomorrow, it's not even going to be 30. Tomorrow night, 19. On Friday, looks like 25.
For a high.
For a high, yeah.
So it's supposed to be really cold Saturday, though, isn't it?
Saturday, it looks like it's going to be about 20.
And a low of like...
The Saturday night low of 10.
Yeah.
And then... About 20 on Sunday, too.
You know, I knew I should have convinced my wife doesn't want to buy an electric blanket. She's worried about an electric blanket. When's the last time you heard of an electric blanket fire?
Haven't.
You haven't. My point exactly.
I haven't used one for years.
You know what she said to me?
To have one.
You can
great.
Just put it on your side. Well, I mean, how does that mitigate the danger? Yeah. If it's just on my side of the bed.
That doesn't make much sense.
I know, unless she puts up some sort of, wall.
Coats herself in, you know,
right,
asbestos
whatever,
or something.
Whatever. Well, then you've got the lawsuit deals.
Right.
You know.
I didn't mean that, but some kind of insulation
yes.
that keeps her flame-proof, fireproof.
Flame retardant.
Yeah.
Is
that,
another
that's
way to
the
put
word
it.
I was looking for. I couldn't
yeah.
think of it.
Yeah. They still make electric blankets, don't they?
I believe so. I don't know.
I had no idea the show was going to end on an electric blanket note. But
it's
logical.
It's a good thought, though.
Yeah, it's logical when you understand just how darn cold it is. So everybody batten down the hatches. Enjoy the snow when and if it comes. As for this evening, thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to Airing It Out with Drew Skaggs, a presentation of the best country, 105.7 WLGC.